Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
The Athletic.
Hello and welcome to a very special episode of the Race Formula E podcast. We are delighted to be recording this on site at the first ever Tokyo E-Prix. So who better to have as guests to preview their first home race than two of Nissan's top Formula E personnel, Team Principal and Managing Director Tommaso Volpe and Tadashi Nishikawa, Chief Powertrain Development. Of course, it wouldn't be a Formula E podcast without my trusty sidekick Sam Smith. So let's get on with the pod. So Tommaso, great to join us. Here we are at the first ever Tokyo E-Prix, a big event for Nissan, no doubt. How excited are you for this?
Well, we are absolutely super excited. We were waiting for this moment for years, I would say. And our headquarters is literally 30-40 minutes drive from here, so we really feel home, and we will have all the top management coming to the race. So I feel a little bit like a child who has to perform at the end of the school year in front of his parents. So there is this kind of excitement, like pressure, but good pressure.
This event is something that was being talked about before I even started working at Formula E 10, 11 years ago. So how important is it to make a big success of this?
Well, I think that being an FIA World Championship, Formula E needed to be in Japan, first of all. Japan is a very important territory for motorsport, and all the big championships try to be here in Japan. And we have the privilege as Formula E to race in Tokyo, so not just in Japan, but in the capital, because we can race in city center. So I think there are all the ingredients to make this event a success, and quite unique in the panorama of motorsport. So I think it's important for Formula E that this becomes a success, and the regular appointment every season from now onwards until 2030, I would say.
So Nishikawa-san, you are from Tokyo originally. Did you ever think you would see a Formula E race on the streets of your hometown?
Yeah, it's very impressive, because personally I have been here several times to see something, the exhibition center, etc. Then now the completed tracks. Yeah, it's impressive for me. Yeah.
What are the locals making of it? Is there a lot of excitement ahead of this?
I think so, because initially I was a bit wondering, to be honest, because now the Formula One calendar is changed. The next week, the Suzuka. Then I was so scared. The many audience will go to Suzuka, then not possible to come here. But actually the ticket has been sold just 1 minute. So it's also the surprising.
So. So Tommaso, there's the big news really. Okay, we're looking forward to a race this weekend, but we're really looking forward to Gen 4 and a confirmation that Nissan is going to be a big part of that. How important is this step forward?
Well, this was quite an important step for us as well, because when we decided to buy the Formula E team and to get in full control, one of the drivers of this decision was the business plan that we call Ambition 2030, which is our very ambitious plan to convert our portfolio in almost full electrified portfolio by 2030, and to make Formula E a perfect global platform to promote this plan, but also to generate additional R&D that can be utilized for the future products. So it was important to make sure that this decision was supported actually until 2030, and in a way Generation 4 is nicely aligned timing wise to the Ambition 2030, so in a way completes the plan that we started 2 years ago when we decided to buy the team.
Tommaso, does it actually make a difference that you're the first to commit to Gen 4? I mean, it's not a race, there's no official or unofficial race to do it, but it's actually a good platform for other manufacturers to I guess make their decisions and understand what the stability of the championship is going to be in the future?
Well, it's not that we wanted to be the first for the sake of it, but what I can say is that, as I said before, because when we bought the team 2 years ago, we did it with a long-term view on this project. I think it was quite natural that the moment it was possible to commit, we were prepared already with our mindset that this would have been something we would have done, because our discussion about this project was done for a long time, already having in mind our Ambition 2030 plan. So I think I'm not surprised that we were the first one committing. And for sure, maybe this helps also the conversation with other manufacturers, maybe, and the fact that the largest car brand currently involved in Formula E has committed the first, I think it might help also other manufacturers to see the sport in a different way.
Sam, that's an interesting point, isn't it? What does this mean to the championship, Formula E having Nissan committed already to Gen 4?
Well, I think it's significant for lots of reasons. Obviously, you've got to go back to Gen 3, and I think it's... you know, it's no secret that Gen 3 was very difficult. There was lots of challenges to overcome, lots of innovations that had to be proven. And I think the reaction to it was pretty positive. It was a difficult time. 18 months ago, there was, you know, a myriad, a whole smorgasbord of challenges that the promoters and the FIA had to overcome. And obviously, the lead time for Gen 4 is pretty quickly after that. And what they've done is they've just given themselves a bit of time to see how they can change the processes. I mean, the tender processes went out pretty much immediately after Gen 3 sort of evidenced itself and got a bit of a stronger foothold in what it was trying to achieve. So once those challenges and problems were overcome, I think it was really key to get the Gen 4 process off on the right foot. And Tommaso, you're nodding in approval at some of that. I imagine that you were at the forefront of some of those discussions.
Yeah, I think that we had plenty of challenges at the beginning of Gen 3. But as a paradox, this in a way helped us to decide with more awareness about Gen 4. And first of all, convinced all the stakeholders to anticipate the conversation about Gen 4. To avoid being in the same kind of a rush for the development that we had in Gen 3, especially when you put in place highly innovative packages, of course you want to have enough time to make sure that it works. But I think he also tested the ecosystem. And we were in a moment, I would say, as you say, break it or make it. And I think in a way, the openness of everyone like FIA, FIO, competitors, manufacturers in discussing how to solve the issues in Gen 3 in a way increased, despite the crisis moments, increased the trust between different parties. And this, as I said, there's a paradox in a way, helped the moment we opened the conversation about Gen 4 and created confidence that there will be anyway the goodwilling from all parties to make it work.
Nishikawa-san, just in terms of the technical aspects of the leap from Gen 3 to Gen 4, very interesting. We're going to have 600 kilowatts of ultimate power. We're going to have different aerodynamic packages for Gen 4 as well. Different tyre supplier, of course, and some people I'm sure that you know quite well from Bridgestone of things you've done in the past. How are you approaching that sort of technical challenge for Gen 4? Because you'll be working on some of the outline architecture of that already, I guess.
To be transparent, the regulation-wise, it's unclear at all. So then basically we need to anticipate what kind of the regulation will be coming. But from Nissan perspective, that we would like to push the all-wheel drive usage in Gen 4. Because you know that Nissan has a strong know-how for the e-force in the market. And you know the car name is actually e-force. Then we really want to push our Nissan technology to the Formula E, linked to the track to road in Gen 4.
And that's an interesting point, because there's always been a small alignment between where road car EV technology is developing and where the rules package are here. How important is it that they are aligned? Do you need to be able to show that what you're doing here is relevant to what you're doing it in the road car division?
Yeah. Actually, that's a big challenge, how to adapt the racing technology to the road car, let's say. But I think from an engineering point of view, the biggest benefit is we can know what is ideal technology performance, let's say, especially the efficiency and the power density. So through the Formula E project, we now acknowledge that this is the ideal performance. Of course, the restriction is completely different to the passenger vehicle, so especially cost and NVH. But at least if we don't have such a restriction, we can achieve such a high performance level. So this is a big, the very important data for Nissan, because now we can break down how to adapt to the road car with assuming the necessary limitation for the passenger vehicle.
How much of Gen 3 Evo will help to inform what goes into Gen 4?
I think we don't have full visibility. I mean, we have visibility on the key technical specs of Gen 4, but of course, a lot will depend on the race format, and it's not just about purely speaking the technical specs. So, but definitely one thing that in Gen 3.5 will start being investigated is the all-wheel drive of the car. So this is probably the only thing that will help also in terms of experience for 2 years, in the last 2 years of Generation 3 towards Gen 4. But then the rest is going to be all different, more power and et cetera, et cetera. Also, the all-wheel drive usage in Gen 3.5 will be limited anyway. So, but I would say probably is the key thing that we can start experiencing in Gen 3 that can give some input for Gen 4.
There's already been a test with some element of the front powertrain kit been used, and the different spec of Hankook tyres. I think it was November last year in Mallorca, wasn't it? And I spoke briefly to Oliver, who really enjoyed the experience and had a notable difference between the grip levels and the power and the push and the traction out of the corners. Maybe to Tadashi, if you could just explain what your, not your predictions, but in terms of the pace that we should see next season for Gen 3 Evo or 3.5 or whatever we're calling it this week. But you know what I'm talking about. Do you think there will be a significant lap time advantage immediately, or will it be incremental over the season once everybody has to got used to the front powertrain and the active nature of the front of the car and the tyres, of course?
Yeah, I think so. So even the FPK power will be very limited. The maximum is more or less 50 kilowatt. But even though this, the significantly lap time could be improved, more as 1 second, let's say, per lap. Then for me, personally, I expect to change the situation for the attack mode for this, because now the attack mode is very difficult to identify what's the benefit of this attack mode. But the Gen 3.5, so maybe the attack mode situation should be changed significantly.
Tommaso, you mentioned there about how for the additional performance of Gen 4, it might impact on the race format. I know it's not been decided or probably not even clear, but if ideally, how would you like the race format to evolve to make the best out of the additional performance the cars will have?
I think one interesting thing that we are discussing already at manufacturer, FIA and FIO levels is that Gen 4, more than the specific format, which is difficult to define now, the philosophy should be that we need to have a more flexible duty cycle, meaning that we want to have some races where efficiency might be relatively less important and we can push cars more for pure performance. And still, it's very important to have other races where the energy management and the efficiency is crucial for performance. We want to have cars and formats which allow to have a larger flexibility. This means also maybe having permanent tracks that like we are having already now, but maybe some also more aggressive, faster permanent tracks, and then still some city centers. So, because the narrative of electric vehicle, electric mobility in general in automotive is changing. It started with, obviously, as the first adoption territory for electric vehicles were city centers because of the range, et cetera, et cetera. But now the electrification is becoming more mainstream. So by the time we arrive to generation four, also for manufacturers, the usage of electric vehicles will be given for granted everywhere. So is becoming less crucial to have mainly city centers in Formula E, because the narrative, the promotion of electric vehicles and the actual technical abilities of these vehicles will make them more usable everywhere. So the network, the charging network in key markets, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So it's going to be more crucial to promote the flexibility of these vehicles, the fact that you can use them in different ways, in a very efficient way, but also in a very performing way.
So do you envisage there being a situation where, say, for a street track, there's a slightly different race format to one where we go to a permanent circuit then?
I don't know if the format in terms of sporting regulations will be different. This is something I wouldn't be against it, but I don't know if it will be the case. I don't know if it will be the case, but definitely the performance of cars. Like, we might have races where efficiency will be less relevant, and races where efficiency will be crucial. We have already this sort of flexibility now, but it's very tight. Whilst what I'm saying is that the duty cycle of the energy in the car for generation four should have a much wider spectrum of possibilities.
You touched on it a little bit there, Tommaso, about the, I suppose, what the future consumers are looking for in all electric cars, and obviously you hope that that's Nissan products. But we've seen, you know, the Tokyo Drift element of the marketing that's gone on yesterday with Formula E, which was, you know, very cute, very, very, I suppose, of its time in terms of what it brings to an urban racing sort of situation. But as Jeff Dodds told us yesterday, there's going to be a big mix of circuits in the future. Do you think evidencing purely the acceleration seems to be something that really gets a hold of people? You know, they did the record in London, of course, the Guinness Book of Records. Is that crucial for you as well? I mean, is that, you talk about the efficiency, but is actually just getting that big marketing bang out there important to you as well?
I think in this time, probably yes, it's interesting. We always need to put things in perspective of the moment when we do them. Like in this moment, Formula E is doing a good job in promoting electrification as an exciting technology. And there are still many people, and probably the majority of them, thinking that electric vehicles are slow, wrongly. And so giving out some information like, look, the electric torque is so immediate that on the pure acceleration, an electric vehicle is unbeatable. Even a normal electric vehicle for road on the pure acceleration is impressive. So I think promoting this with some stunts, like you just mentioned, the record on the acceleration can be useful in this moment. Probably by the time we arrive to generation four, this won't be necessary. And we will talk about more performance overall in a more holistic way, which could be the lap time, which at the moment is not really the where we want to focus. And so I think obviously the same way the technology is evolving, the promotion that comes with it will evolve. So you will be focusing on different elements. And I think it's not wrong at this moment to focus on the pure acceleration, because there are still many people not aware of the advantage of electrification on this specific aspect.
Okay, so we've been looking forward to a future. Let's look to a much closer future. We have a race coming up on Saturday here. Obviously, the last race in Sao Paulo, both podium places held with Nissan powertrains. Is this some form that you're going to be keeping running over?
Well, on one end, it's good to come to Tokyo with two podiums in a row. And as you said, in the last race, two Nissan cars on the podium. On the other end, is the worst that could happen to manage expectations for our domestic race. So, of course, we would love to have three Nissan cars on the podium this weekend. possibly with an inverted order this time in terms of competitors. And but of course each race is different and everybody wants to win a race, but I think that Tokyo there is even more will from everyone to be at the top. It's the first race in Japan. I think everybody really, really, really wants to be on the podium. And so I think it's going to be tough. But of course, we will do our best to make sure that we succeed.
Well, we wish you all the best of luck. I think the fans here will absolutely erupt if you're able to deliver that sort of result. And that's what we come here for, to see that. So thank you very much.
Yeah, this is my point. I mean, they should let us go and win. I mean, it will be much better for the success of the event, because I'm sure the majority of the fans out there will support Nissan. So it would be beneficial for everyone.
We're obviously, as you can hear, we're sat in the paddock. People are getting ready for the action to start tomorrow with free practice. Just noticed on your front wings, Tommaso, you've got a message there. It says on the flaps of the wing. It says "We love," and then there's some Japanese typography. What's
Tokyo.
The
this was actually Nishikawa-san. He told us that this means "We love Tokyo," but I don't know if it's "We love Nishikawa."
It's correct to Tokyo, for sure.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. Very best of luck for that. And this is a race which I think we all hope it really establishes its place in the calendar. So good luck for the weekend.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy!
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds!
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
We'll get back to the pod in a moment, but first, a word about our partner, Grammarly. No matter what kind of work you do, how you communicate is key. All those emails, reports, and presentations are equally important to the collaboration needed to get things done, and Grammarly can help. Grammarly is your AI writing partner to help you communicate more effectively and efficiently so you can make a bigger impact at work. I know from experience that Grammarly can help you save time on any writing task and ensure you feel confident about what you've produced. In fact, 96% of Grammarly's users report that Grammarly helps them craft more impactful writing, and their tone suggestions can help you navigate even the most difficult work conversations. Make a bigger impact at work with Grammarly. Sign up and download for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast. Easier said, done.
So we've managed to drag one of the drivers out of the garage to come and join us. So, Ollie Rowland, great to see you. Amazing to be in Japan and with a Nissan badge on you there. A little bit of extra pressure, but what have you made of the track? It seems quite interesting, quite tight from what I've seen.
Yeah, I mean, a couple of the drivers had tried it before we had and fed back that it was a little bit boring, slow, bumpy, didn't like it. But honestly, like, I went on the sim and I loved it. Like, I think it's very technical. There is bumps. Lots of corner by corner flow like required. I think it'll be a big challenge for us to put everything together. And it's more of a traditional Formula E track, you know, like maybe not quite like Hong Kong, but that type of circuit where the corners are quite slow, it's quite bumpy. You're gonna have to play with the walls a lot, but I think it's gonna be good fun. And I mean, the race might not be the most exciting race, but the quali laps are gonna be intense.
Bit of a last minute change with the addition of another chicane. Do you get the reasoning behind that?
Yes. I never drove the other corner, but I understand, but I think we're very safe these days. We can afford to be a bit more brave, let's say.
Yeah, you're all big boys.
Exactly.
Ollie, they've got 32 kilowatt hours to use, usable energy, this weekend, this Saturday. I mean, that's sort of Excel level of what you guys have got. Is it expected that it'll be generally a flat-out race, but maybe not so much as London was last year?
I think for the leader, no, but for everybody else, yes. So it's going to be one of them tricky races where I think ideally you want two of your cars at the front, and it's a big advantage. If you can have two cars in the top three, I think it becomes a big advantage because you can, let's say, maybe strategically position yourself to not lead the whole race. I think for the leader, it'll be tough to do the whole race out front and not be passed. But I think for everybody else, be quite straightforward, almost flat out race type of thing, or not flat out, but very difficult to pass in the pack.
You've not seen the track sort of physically yet. You'll do that tomorrow on the track walk. When you go around there, what will you be looking for? I mean, obviously the attack mode area is where you go offline. That's going to be crucial. Do you see any, from what you've seen in the sim, any sort of advantages or little secrets you can get from that? Is it going to be quite straightforward there?
The attack mode's very straightforward. You lose very little time. So again, it's about not losing positions going there. I to be honest, I expect the race to be quite not as exciting as Sao Paulo, let's say, in terms of overtaking. Maybe I'll be wrong, but I think the quali and even the margin for error in the race in terms of like clipping a wall or crashing on your own can be quite high because it's like very technical and you'll be close to the walls in a lot of places. So I think margin for error and qualifying on the limit will be key.
Yeah, on that note, you say it's like old school track. Does that mean you think you might be able to force someone into an error if you can really get behind them, keep the pressure on, you get them to clip a wall, tag
possibly,
a tire?
Yeah, you know, a bit of jet lag, bit of fatigue. Who knows? I mean, I think, yeah, it's going to be a busy race. And to be honest, when you're doing 20 corners, however many laps we're doing, in these types of corners, there's always a chance that you can make a small mistake. So for sure, that'll be one of the things you'll be pushing for to try and force someone into that.
And strategy for the last corner of the race, Ollie, this time? Going to do three this time?
No, I'll be leading out of it.
I mean, talk us through that. I spoke to you briefly afterwards. You know, what a move. I mean, I think I described it as straight out of the karting manual there. I mean, you sort of took an extra acute apex in that last corner. It looked like sort of instinct, that you could see what was going on ahead. Is that what it was, pure instinct?
Yeah, I mean, people said, but if it was, I didn't even think about it. I just naturally read what was happening in front and did what I thought was right. I think I was a bit lucky because our car was pretty good over the curb in the last corner. We weren't having too much bottoming, and every lap I could take a lot of curb. So I kind of knew I was doing that line, not like obviously as tight as the exit, but I was able to take a lot of curb, which really helped me get at the inside of both of them. But yeah, it kind of all played out, and you just know what's going to happen with them two into that last corner. And there was a couple of times in the race, I think Dennis passed Mortara in the last corner in a similar sort of way, and I managed to get him off the corner as well. And I kind of knew that by forcing him even tighter, it was going to be easy to pick them both off the corner.
I think we're all hoping to see something similar for that this weekend, because the support Nissan's going to have here is going to be extreme. So if you could do that again, they are literally going to be carrying you around the city, aren't they?
Yeah. I mean, that's the dream, you know. I mean, already I think to pick up two podiums in the first four races was probably more than we expected. I think momentum's really on our side. But yeah, I mean, it's a type of race that I think swings in our direction in terms of we've got a fast qualifying car. The efficiency is not super intense here. So yeah, you can dream about being on the top step, which is something I haven't done too much of over the last 2.5 years, let's say.
Well, let's hope that dream becomes reality, and we'll talk about you in the post-race show on Sunday.
Fingers crossed.
Cheers. Thanks for coming on.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic.
See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Don't just ride the index, seek to outperform it with Fidelity Active ETFs. Learn more at fidelity.com/active ETFs. Before investing in any exchange-traded fund, you should consider its investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Contact Fidelity for a prospectus, an offering circular, or if available, a summary prospectus containing this information. Read it carefully. While active ETFs offer the potential to outperform an index, these products may more significantly trail an index as compared with passive ETFs. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC, member NYSE, SIPC.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
So, great to hear from Ollie there. Anything else going on, Sam?
It's reasonably quiet, actually. I think full focus will be on Tokyo tomorrow. So the one thing which I did pick up in the paddock is a few of the spots for the test drives in two, actually. There's the extra free practice session in Misano next month, and then the traditional rookie test in Berlin on the Monday after that double header. So Robert Schwartzman will be driving for DS Penske as he did last season, and Jack Crawford, Formula 2 driver.
Oh, interesting.
American F2 driver is going to be at Andretti with Zane Maloney. So a few berths there, a few more to follow. I think a lot of the seats will be taken by F2 and F3 drivers because of the clashing sports car calendar around the globe. So expect some young bucks from F2 and F3.
Have we got any confirmation on who's going to be filling those seats, especially the Envision one, Jet?
No, we haven't. Envision haven't decided yet who's going to take that. I mean, the hot favourite is probably Joel Eriksson and either or Tom Dillman. That would make a lot of
super
sense.
Super sub Tom Dillman.
Yeah, of course, because, you know, they work for Jaguar, they're test and development drivers, and it just makes a whole lot of sense. I mean, they could take a gamble. They could look at Felipe Drugovic, although I don't know if he's just recently signed an ELMS deal to do European Le Mans Series, so I'm not sure if they've got
the irony
around. But, yeah. Who'd have thought of a sports car clash with Formerie? But yeah, I think it's likely that at least one of Dillman or Ericsson will end up in those cars.
So we've had a chance to have a little look around. It's an interesting place, isn't it? It's sort of half Red Hook, half XL, all with a little bit of pink cherry blossom, a bit of Tokyo specialness added in.
I'm just adjusting my spectacles, having seen the Porsche, which has just flared up some blind spots in my retina. I mean, yeah, everybody's gone a bit funky this weekend. There's extra cherry blossom on the Nissans, of course, and Porsche have gone with this garish. I've never seen cherry blossom that colour, but whatever it is, it's going to catch the attention of the cameraman and the fans there. It reminds me a lot of Red Hook. It's got that feeling, slightly industrial, a big vista of Tokyo and the estuary. I think the cameras are going to have to be a bit creative to get a full panorama.
It's quite a lot of grey.
Yeah, Tokyo Tower will probably feature in some of the pieces that you see from the helicopter. But yeah, I think the anticipation's building here. As we speak, it's Thursday. I think, you know, traditional media day tomorrow, lots more media around. And there are some fans already, including Andre Lotterer's super fan, who I spotted.
Ah, it's brilliant.
It's her home race. But I've genuinely seen her in Santiago, London, Paris, Portland. You know, she travels anywhere that Andre is. So, but she didn't have to travel far today.
Cool. Well, unless you've got anything else, I think we can look forward to the race and we'll catch up. Scratch that bit, Johnny. Anything else, Sam?
Well, the big news today is that there's going to be a new manufacturer in the championship.
Yes, we're going to save that, though, aren't we, for the post-race special?
We're going to do an extensive interview with Mark Preston, who's part and parcel of that team principal from the DS to Chi today. A couple of titles in his bag, so it's a proper effort, this, with Lola, a great name, one that's got emotional ties to me, having worked there for 10 years.
Indeed, yeah.
So quite pleased.
Not that you ever mention it, obviously.
Quite pleased to see the yellow and blue back of Lola. Of course, Yamaha, their first program since F1 back in 1997, of course, that memorable year with Damon Hill.
Good stuff. Well, all that to look forward to, and hopefully a very exciting race when we record our post-race podcast. I think we're going to do it here as well, so we're really taking advantage of the fact we're in time. So, yeah, speak to you soon. Goodbye.
The Athletic.